You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
The Punt, William Hill's top flight football podcast.
Hello and welcome along to the midweek edition of The Punt. We've got an action-packed week of Premier League football, 10 fixtures over the course of Tuesday and Wednesday evening. My name is Mark Walton. I'm joined in the studio by Dave Kellner and on the line by Derek McGovern. How are you, fellas?
Very well indeed. Very well.
Good. Quite a lot of Premier League football to look forward to midweek.
There is indeed. And I'm tipping for once in here, which...
Switch off now, yeah. Listeners!
Just about to say that. You can listen to Derek and then maybe go and have a toilet break while I'm speaking and then come back. Admittedly, you'd have to have a pretty weak bladder, but I think that's probably the best tactic this week.
Yeah, we'll try and get by with you, Dave. Luckily, Derek's still in place. You've been knocking in the winners of late, haven't you, Derek?
Well, yeah, I mean, that one at the weekend, Stoke at home to Villa, we were just saying off air that we were 7-10 when we recorded the podcast at the weekend, on Friday, and then by kickoff time, God knows how, they drifted to 10-11. How did that happen? Why would they drift at home to Aston Villa? They should have shortened to about 1-7. That's how certainty it was. What a certainty it was. Yes, I'm firing at the moment.
Good stuff.
And that's what you need as well, Derek, an ego boost as well. To start the podcast. Thanks for that, Mark.
Yeah, it's all right. I'm just trying to get pundits on side before we crack on.
I hate egotists because they always think more of themselves than they do of me.
Oh, fantastic.
Superb. Right, let's get stuck into it then. We'll start with the live game on Tuesday evening. Bournemouth take on Southampton in a South Coast derby. Bournemouth are 19-10. The draw 11-5. Southampton are 6-4. Southampton have won the last five fixtures between these two sides. And I think you've got to go back, I think it's about 58 years for the last time Bournemouth won a league game against Southampton. We'll start with you, Derek. Is it going to follow suit here?
Oh, why did you start with me? What a tricky one to start with. This is, it really is. I mean, Bournemouth, I thought, a little bit unlucky not to get 3 points at Watford at the weekend. Probably deserved to win that game. Yeah, and the backable here at 19-10, what worries me is that they don't win enough games at home. Only they played 13 games at their ground. What is it called now? Vitality Stadium, is it? And they've only won three. So really, 19-10 against a Southampton side that don't lose many on the road. I know you're a big fan of Southampton, aren't you, Mark? You're the guy, you're the reason they're shorter than they should be every week. 6-4, that's a little bit short for me as well here. You know what I might do? I might go for a 0-0 draw here. The draw 11-5 appeals, but I've got a sneaking feeling that both sides will play safe here. But I think a draw for Bournemouth will be a decent result for them. Keeps them ticking along nicely away from the relegation zone. And I don't think Southampton would be too upset by that either. So, yeah, the draw for me.
11-5, the price of the draw. What do you make of it, Dave?
Yeah, it is a tough fixture to start with, this one. And what Derek says is correct. Southampton, as you mentioned, Mark, they are unbeaten in their last six against Bournemouth, which is a factor here. They've won the last five. They have only scored six goals in their last nine Premier League away matches. Southampton, this could be very low scoring. Derek mentioned the 0-0 there, available at 15-2. And Bournemouth have struggled to score goals recently as well. They've got just eight goals in their last 10 Premier League matches. That's since Boxing Day. They failed to score in half of those as well. Good things, positives for Bournemouth here is Max Gradle returned against Watford. He looked likely. And that game against Watford, twice they played Watford this season, and both times Gomez has been absolutely outstanding, and they could have easily got all 3 points at the weekend. Even though they lost to Chelsea, Southampton, that game obviously turned on that Cesc Fabregas, the cross-come shot that eluded Fraser Forster. Up to that point, I thought they, even though they give Chelsea a lot of the ball, a lot of possession, they coped pretty well, and maybe slightly unfortunate to lose that game 2-1. If you're looking for goal scorers here, Shane Long scored again against Chelsea. He's scored in successive Premier League matches now. He's 2-1 to score any time in this game. I like the draw as well, though. I'm with Derek here. I won't do this throughout the podcast, listeners, but yeah, on this occasion I'm with him. The draw at 11-5, and I like the draw and under 2.5 goals. I think if this is going to be a draw, it's going to either finish 0-0 or 1-1, and drawing under 2.5 goals is in the market at 11-4, so it gives you a bit of a boost on that 11-5, and I can't see this being 2-2 or 3-3 this game, so I'll go either 0-0 or 1-1, and maybe if you are looking for goal scorers, Shane Long for Southampton to score any time is 2-1. And Max Gradle, who looked very lively when he came on against Watford at the weekend, 14-5 for him to score any time.
All right, so both of you fancy to be low on goals. Probably going to end up as a draw. I just want to mention the enhanced odds offers we have here as well, even though you've both gone for a draw. Josh King to score and Bournemouth to win is 6-1. Charlie Austin to score and a Southampton win is 4-1. Just on a bit of a side note, how do you think Charlie Austin's getting on at Southampton? Obviously scored early on his debut, didn't he? Mm. So do you think he could play a part here?
He's done okay, hasn't he? But I see him as more of an impact substitute type of player rather than someone who's going to start games and really be influential. I think Charlie Austin, Derek, is just Charlie Austin, isn't he? He's not a world beater. He's a professional striker, but he's never going to wow you over a sustained period.
Well, I liken him in a way to John Aldridge. When John Aldridge played for Liverpool, he scored a million goals, and I watched him. I used to think, he's not doing much more than I could do, to be honest. And yet he got a billion goals. And it's the same with Charlie Austin. You look at him during the game and you think, ain't that much there, and then he'll come off the pitch with two goals under his belt. So I can't make my mind up about Charlie Austin.
You're the only one that can remember John Aldridge out of the three of us, Derek.
I still see him regularly on the golf course, to be honest. He's still there. He's still, you know, reliving past glories. Not on the golf course, but about yeah, he was what a striker he was for Liverpool. But then again, he was playing in the team with Beardsley and Barnes and people like that. And you know, you and I, even Phelps, would open our accounts a few times there.
Superb. Let's move on to the second game we're going to look at then. Norwich against Chelsea. Norwich 4-1. The draw is 3-1. Chelsea are 4-7. Norwich on a bad run of form still. They're 8 games without a win now. And Chelsea have turned the corner. They look a different side under Gus Hiddink, don't they? What do you make of it, Dave?
Yeah, they do. I think that's absolutely key. I mean, under Gus Hiddink, they've only lost one of their 23 Premier League matches, which is incredible. And a lot of the players are trying to campaign for Gus Hiddink to stay in the setup after the season ends. It sounds like Antonio Conte is going to be on his way in at Chelsea. But if they could keep Hiddink, I think they'd have a sustained title challenge next season, because they do look a completely different side with him at the helm. And this is a game they should win comprehensively against Norwich, who are really struggling at the moment. They've got question marks over the fitness of Wes Houlihan and Sebastian Bessong as well. I just think in a few games, Alex Neil has a tendency to get his players too fired up. We've seen it a couple of times where they've scored big goals and then conceded straight away at the other end when he's been going crazy on the sidelines. 2-0 up against West Ham, ended up drawing that game. Good performance against Leicester, but at the end of that match, couldn't maintain that focus and allowed Leonardo Ochoa to get that winning goal. Prior to that, they'd lost against Villa. I mean, losing against Villa away from home, lost against Tottenham 3-0, lost against Liverpool 5-4. So they've only picked up one point from a possible 27 in the league. That's pretty poor. And I think Chelsea win this game. Diego Costa looks like a different man under Hiddink. I think a comprehensive Chelsea victory. Maybe Chelsea -1 in this match is the way to go as well. I think Chelsea -1 is the way I'd play it.
Okay, I'll just get the price on Chelsea -1. Chelsea minus a goal here is 8-5.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right. Yeah, well, you see Chelsea scoring goals against Norwich. I know they made a big thing on the TV at the weekend about Norwich playing a different system. It was a sort of five at the back when without the ball, etc. Blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, you know, they're playing against an informed Chelsea side now, a firing Chelsea side. And I can't see them keeping him out. I can see Chelsea running riot here, to be honest. What you say about Gus Hiddink is right, by the way. You know, when you see an interim manager taking over, and you know, there's always odds for other fellas to take the reins, but then the interim manager is always priced up as well. And then, you know, 6 weeks later, he's done a terrible job. He's booted out and someone new comes in. But Hiddink's done a fantastic job. So what future is there for interim managers when, you know, you do a job like he's done and you still don't get the gig? I don't understand it.
Yeah. I can only assume, Derek, that he doesn't want it.
Well, he's never come out and said that, has he?
No, he's not. Yeah. It's strange because you'd think if Chelsea want sustained success, which I presume they do, Hiddink is the man to provide it, because his two spells as manager at Chelsea, he's produced exceptional results, and it's that sustained period of consistency now, and that's what Chelsea needs. So, and it's getting those those prima donnas, those big players playing for him as well. Diego Costa, Cesc Fabregas, who looked incredibly poor under Jose Mourinho before Mourinho got the sack. He looks like a different man under Hiddink.
Yeah, he does. I'd written Fabregas off completely. I thought he'd gone at the game, but he's come back firing well. And Hazard as well. I mean, who can explain the downturn in his form in the second season under Mourinho? And then he's been, well, not sensational, but somewhere near his normal self in recent games. The thing about what worries me about this price at Chelsea 4-7 is that they're being priced up like Chelsea would be in their pomp. 4-7, they wouldn't be much shorter than that, would they, if they were top of the league? I really can't imagine them being 2-5, maybe 1-2. To back him at 4-7, you've got to take it on trust that this is the Chelsea that's as good as they can play. I'm not too sure about that yet. What I would rather, instead of maybe not Chelsea minus a goal, well, I might get Chelsea to win and Diego Costa to score a 2-1. It's an enhanced odds in the Hills in the Hills list. Costa's even money to score at any time, and Chelsea, I can't imagine he wouldn't score against Norwich, to be honest. Most teams do, most players do now. And that's the way I'd play. I don't like back and forth of 7 pokes away from home, and there's still question marks about them.
Just a couple of quick points here as well on the odds in this game. The reverse fixture, Chelsea won 1-0. That was at Chelsea's lowest ebb when they beat Norwich at home 1-0. It was that run where they'd only got 1 win in 7. And that cost Mourinho his job eventually. And the other headline offer, enhanced odds offer here, Stephen Naismith to score and Norwich to win, 12-1. Naismith's got an unbelievable record against Chelsea, weirdly. He scored 6 goals in 7 Premier League appearances against Chelsea, which is incredible because you don't really equate Naismith with that many.
Didn't he get that hat trick for Everton against them earlier in the season, and then didn't get a game afterwards
or
something?
Yeah, that's it. And he's 16-5 to score any time if you do want a pro Norwich bet here, but I don't.
You don't either, do you, Derek Weathers?
No, I can't. I just can't see. I mean, they got a few plaudits for that the weekend for keeping Leicester at bay for a long time, but they still lost. And is it 6 or 7 straight defeats or something like that now? They've only won 6 games all season out of 27, only 4 at home. Liverpool scored 5 past them, wasn't it, or 4, was it, a few weeks ago? They're letting goals for fun at home. It's just Chelsea all over.
They've just got that 1 point in their last 8 matches in all competitions. That came at home against West Ham. When they threw away that 2-goal lead and drew 2-2.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so, Chelsea all the way.
All right, moving on to Aston Villa against Everton next then. Aston Villa 15-4, the draw 13-5. Everton are 3-4. Villa still in trouble, sit bottom of the Premier League. And I'm going to start with you, Derek, because we know from historically on the punt, you quite like a go on Everton.
Yeah, I think the nap of the week at 4-5 here, Everton. I just can't see how they won't win. We all know Aston Villa's limitations. 16 points. I struggle to see how they got 16 points on the board. Remember, was it Derby who went down with the world? Was it Derby? Yeah, the record points low of 11 points. Aston Villa are 5 points clear of that. I don't know how, because they're every bit as bad as Derby were in that terrible season for the Rams. One or two people might say 4-1 at home, a Premier League team. But Everton are no mugs, and they're better away from home anyway, Everton, in my eyes. It's at Goodison that they're underperforming. In fact, they've only lost 1 game away from home all season, Everton. Drawn an awful lot, but they haven't met teams as bad as Villa every week. I'm as strong on this one as I was Stoke at home to Villa at the weekend.
Very good. You've got to feel a bit sorry for Remy Gard. It's like looking down at your Scrabble tiles and seeing all vowels, really. Because when he took over, he's got this shell of a side, but he's not changed anything, really. And he keeps playing players out of position as well, which is not wise. He needs to get a formation and then slot his players in. Jordan Veretout's been playing wide positions, which is not his forte, and Carlos Hill has been playing wide as well. So he's trying to utilise his players, but not playing them in the correct positions. And if you don't change anything, the results will continue to be the same. And Aston Villa lost at the weekend against Stoke away from home. Derek mentioned that Stoke price at the weekend was incredible. And they were flattered, Aston Villa, to get one in that game. Stoke dominated, especially in the first half, and they could have won that 3-4 or 5-1, in all honesty. Prior to that, there was that dismal performance against Liverpool where they lost 6-0 at Villa Park and were dominated from minute one. They did beat Norwich, but we all know Norwich are going through a poor poor spell at the moment. Prior to that in the Premier League, lost 2-0 against West Ham, lost 4-0 in the Cup against Manchester City. Only won two of their last 14 Premier League matches at home as well. And as Derek mentioned, on the road, Everton have been hard to beat. Lost just one of their last 13 away games in the Premier League. On the flip side of that, though, Derek, this Everton side, they have underperformed all season. When you think they've only won three of their last 13 Premier League matches, drawing six of those. But with those players at Roberto Martinez's disposal, that just has to change at some point. And I reckon Romelu Lukaku gets on the score sheet here. I love the enhanced odds offer, in all honesty. Lukaku to score and Everton to win is in the betting at 5-2. He's got a good record against Aston Villa as well. Scored five goals in four Premier League appearances for Everton against Villa. They have got Jordan Ayew back, Aston Villa. That's a positive. But he's not even the best Ayew in the Premier League. So I wouldn't read too much into that. And I think Everton can have some fun against Villa here. I like the enhanced odds offer. That's the bet that I'm going for. Lukaku to score and Everton to win 5-2.
Are you just happy with the 4-5?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was happy with it at the weekend for Stoke. I mean, sometimes when you see a bet, there's been a few bets this season where you think it's a copper bottom victory. Stoke was one of them. And Everton is another in my eyes. So why try to be clever and fancy and fart around looking for enhanced odds when you've got a surefire winner there?
Yeah, fair enough. Let's move on to Sunderland against Crystal Palace next then. Sunderland are 6-4, the draw 11-5, Crystal Palace 15-8 in the betting here. I might be going a little bit mad here, but are Sunderland the player given that how bad Crystal Palace have been? It's 10 games in the league now that without a win for Crystal Palace. You can go first, Derek. Am I going crazy here?
No, I can't believe how bad Palace were in that first half against West Brom. They made West Brom look like Bayern Munich. I mean, they were absolutely appalling. I've seen some bad performances this season. You know, last in Villa's last 23 matches, for instance. But nothing as bad as Palace were in that first half. And as I was watching, I was thinking, they are a team that they're just going to go for the FA Cup. They're not interested. They're just not interested in the league. And if they don't smarten up soon, all of a sudden they might be in relegation trouble because they've only got 32 points. Second half, you know, big improvement from them. But you could argue that West Brom took the foot off the gas. You could argue that they had to do something. They couldn't carry on as bad as they were in the first half. So you're probably right. You know, yeah. See, the danger in the back of you're arguing here then, Mark, that you fancy Sunderland here at 6-4, and they weren't impressive at the weekend, I thought. But remember how Palace smartened up in that second half once Bolasie came on, and he's coming back to full fitness, and I think they're a different side with him in the team. I'd like to see what the team sheet was first. At this juncture, I'd be back in Sunderland at 6-4 because they have everything to play for, and Palace look like a team who aren't playing in the league. But if Velassi's in the lineup, I might change my mind. Earlier in the season, I was happy to back Palace at these kind of odds away from home because they were a better team away from home. But right now, they can't get a win for love nor money. So it's a fixture that troubles me. Minus Bolasie, I'll be back in Sunderland. If Bolasie plays, I wouldn't know.
Yeah, he's massive for them, isn't he, Bolasie? They're almost they almost rely on him. He's almost a one-man team.
He's only one team.
I agree with Derek wholeheartedly here. I think he's hit the nail on the head. It does revolve around whether Yannick Bolasie starts in this match. Pardew got it completely wrong against West Brom. He played Emmanuel Adebayor up front with Connor Wickham. That didn't work at all. Adebayor was substituted for Yannick Bolasie at half time, and then they looked like a different team in the second half, and Connor Wickham got those two goals. But as Derek mentioned, it's whether you think that in that game West Brom eased their foot off the pedal there, and that result, that scoreline, ended up flattering Crystal Palace. Pardew's demise, though, Derek, I mean, they've gone 10 Premier League games without winning. They've only drawn three of those, so they've picked up 3 points from a possible 30. 10 great months as Palace boss for Alan Pardew, but things change quickly. And I can remember when people were saying that he was the man to be next England manager.
Yeah.
That was only 4 or 5 months ago. Yeah. And now he's under pressure as Crystal Palace boss. And apart from in the Cup, they are not performing with any sort of fluency. They do look a different team when they've got Bolasie on the left and Wilfred Zaha on the right. And the assumption is that Connor Wickham is going to play up front. Sam Allardyce has a few problems with injuries. Duncan Watmore is out with an ankle injury. And Jermaine Lenz will be out as well. And there's pressure on Sunderland. Maybe a little bit more pressure on Sunderland to get 3 points here than there is on Crystal Palace, because Crystal Palace do have 32 points on the board already, and Sunderland, they've got 23 points, and Newcastle have a game in hand on them as well. So it's imperative that Sunderland get all 3 points here. But it's impossible to back Crystal Palace at 2-1 when they've not won in 10 and they've drawn 3, particularly as we have seen an upturn in Sunderland's form recently. They were good against West Ham on Saturday afternoon. West Ham didn't deserve to win that game, edged them 1-0 in the end. Sunderland not clinical enough in front of goal, and that's something that Allardyce mentioned in his post-match press conference. Prior to that, of course, they'd won at the Stadium of Light, beating Manchester United 2-1, came from 2 goals down against Liverpool to draw that game 2-2. So I think they'll be happy with 4 points from their last 3 Premier League games, and they could have got something against the Hammers at West Ham on Saturday. Sunderland to win at 6-4 has got to be my play here, given how bad Crystal Palace have been in the league.
All right, so kind of leaning towards Sunderland then, but obviously keep an eye on the team news, because if Bolasie plays, then that's going to change opinions a little bit there. The final game we'll look at on Tuesday evening is Leicester City against West Brom. Leicester are 11-20. The draw 3-1. West Brom are 5-1. Leicester, still top of the Premier League, winner against Norwich, sees them stay at the top. They take on West Brom, who are 13th, but haven't been playing too bad, really, in some respects. But I know you've got quite a bullish opinion here, Dave, so what do you make of it?
Yeah, this is the one. I think Leicester City slip up here against West Brom. I know that they're 4-6 to win this game now, and as we've mentioned on the podcast last weekend, Derek, Arsenal and Manchester City in this circumstance would be a lot shorter. But even though they're unbeaten in 10 games at the King Power after beating Norwich 1-0 on Saturday, N'Golo Kante might not be fit for this game. He limped off with a hamstring injury. And as many professionals say, or ex-professionals say, the hamstring is one of those where you can feel perfectly fine in training, but when it comes to the match day, it can just pop quickly. And he's been hugely influential this season. If he's out, I think it's going to be difficult for them to break down West Brom. And one thing that Norwich did exceptionally well in that game against Leicester up until the 90th minute was they didn't allow Jamie Vardy any space in behind. They pressurised Leicester City, but sat off them at the same time and didn't allow Vardy to make those runs in behind. They need Riyad Mahrez and Jamie Vardy to continue their goal scoring form, 33 goals between them. But West Brom, they are unbeaten in their last 6 trips to Leicester, admittedly taking on a different Leicester City side, as this one's a much better Leicester City side now. But I think Saido Berahino could have a big part to play in this match. Tony Pulis has called on him to show his quality in the latter stage of the season. I think he will, because he's desperate to get a big money move in the summer. And the only way he's going to do that is by showing a willing attitude in the last 6 weeks of the season. Saido Berahino to score any time here is 3-1. I love that price. I think he'll get on the score sheet. And I reckon West Brom get something out of this game. So I'll be playing West Brom +1 at 5-4 in this match.
Yeah, you're right there. That is a good shout, because what you're getting from West Brom, I bet you Tony Pulis would have studied the highlights of the full game probably if he had a chance of Leicester against Norwich, because Norwich set up the way West Brom will set up.
Yeah.
And they won't give them any space. They won't allow Vardy to run in behind. It's exactly the way they will play. And we saw how Leicester struggled to break Norwich down. Everybody breaks Norwich down sooner or later. Not too many people break West Brom down when they go away to set up shop and go for a point. I mean, look at their away goals record. They've only conceded 14 goals in 13 away games. Now, that's far fewer than Arsenal at the top of the league. I can see this being a very low-scoring game, and yeah, I'd agree with you. West Brom, with a goal start, looks a very good bet at 5-4. I was surprised by West Brom's performance against Palace. I didn't expect that from them. I thought in the first half they looked sensational, but again, as we discussed earlier, was that because Palace was so awful? I don't know. It's hard to judge on the one game. Certainly before that, in their FA Cup game against Reading, they were very poor, West Brom. But yeah, I think they've got a real chance of getting an upset here. So yeah, I'll play safe and go for a West Brom with a goal start.
And we've talked about Leicester being incredible all season, Derek, and they've done it with a limited squad. That's going to get tested in these last couple of months. They've only made 22 changes to their starting 11 in the Premier League games combined this season. That's at least 14 fewer than any other club. So they've done it basically with that starting 11. If N'Golo Conte is injured for this game on Tuesday night, that's going to be costly. I don't think they've got the squad depth to be able to have those injuries at this stage of the season and continue to keep churning out results. And West Brom, Tony Pulis will love going there as an underdog on Tuesday night, and it's the sort of game he'll get his tactics spot on, and I think they'll grind something out.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. The tinker man doesn't tinker anymore, does he? Because he doesn't have the options. So, yeah, let's move on to Wednesday evening then. The televised game on Wednesday is Liverpool against Manchester City. It's 29-20 for Liverpool. The draw 12-5. Man City are 9-5. Obviously, these two sides met in the Carling Cup final. Man City winning that on penalties. But the last three meetings between the two sides, Liverpool haven't lost. They're doing okay against City of late. Can they win this one, Derek?
Well, I think City are a real good bet here at 17-10. Liverpool won a few plaudits for their performance at Wembley. But in my eyes, City always had control, and I'm surprised they didn't win it in 90 minutes. They could easily have done so. They had some great chances. And for once, Sergio Aguero was found wanting in front of goal. You know, had he been his normal self, he could have won, you know, 3 or 4-1 City in my eyes. And I just don't see how the underdogs for this game. Liverpool are 8-5, City 17-10. I don't see that at all, especially if City have got it all to play for in the league and Liverpool haven't. You know, and we've seen Liverpool struggle at Anfield this season. They've only won 4 games from 12 at home. OK, City's record away from home is not great, but they've won more games away from home than Liverpool have won at home. And they're the underdogs for this game when they've just basically beat, you know, put Liverpool to the... I thought they put Liverpool to the sword, you know. I know it was only 1-1 after extra time, but I looked at that game and I thought, they're a class above Liverpool. And one thing about City is, you know, there's another gear to come from them. All these other teams at the top, they're pretty much scrambling for their lives, but City are on their heels. You know, they're like a classy racehorse with 2 furlongs to go, coming hands and heels on the heels of the leaders, you know, with a double handful they've got. And I'm going to go for City here. I think this could be the start of a City end-of-season run that will see them winning the title.
Yeah, if Sterling had taken that glorious chance as well, it would have been 2-0 City at that point, wouldn't it? And that would have probably killed the game at the weekend. So David, do you agree?
Just to pick up on your point about Raheem Sterling, we could be talking about any football match with Sterling. I think in front of goal he is still lacking, and maybe that final product's not quite there from Sterling yet. I thought he played reasonably well in that Capital One Cup final. Simon Mignolet, Derek, had a strange game, didn't he, in the final, because he was clearly at fault for the Fernandinho goal, but many people giving him a bit of kudos for those big saves he made. But the really top quality goalkeepers, they don't only make saves like that, they don't let in shots like Fernandinho's, because
he
was absolutely at fault for that goal. And it's easy enough to say, yeah, well, he made amends by making those saves late on. The really best goalkeepers, they do that, but then they don't come up with or they don't make errors like he made for the Fernandinho goal. I still think it's one of the strangest decisions all season to give him that big money 5-year deal, maybe just protecting themselves, Liverpool. I still get the feeling, Derek, that Klopp might go out and try and find a first choice keeper in the summer.
He's got to. He can't keep Mignolet. You're right. You know, every keeper's capable of making those good saves he made. I mean, that's why the Premier League goalkeepers. But you don't. When you're a Premier League goalkeeper, you cannot make mistakes like he did for the first goal. Okay, you can maybe 2 or 3 a season, you might get away with that. But he's doing it every week now. There's always a blunder a week from Mignolet, and that's just not good enough at this level.
Is that why they offered him a contract, though, to try and boost his ego a little bit, give him a bit of a confidence boost? That they
Oh, that's good, then. Be crap all season and get a 5-year deal to boost your confidence.
I just wondered if it was Klopp maybe saying, I'm going to back you. Prove me right.
Isn't that how you extended your stay on the Punt podcast?
No, they haven't given me that boost to my confidence recently. Wonder why that is.
One interesting stat on this game, by the way, Derek, I don't know if you noticed this. Man City, last 12 Premier League trips to Anfield, drawn 4, lost 8. They've not got a win in their last 12 Premier League visits to Anfield, which is incredible. And maybe it is a reason why the odds are framed as they are, because I find this a very, very difficult match to call because of the Capital One Cup final. And you know, a lot of those players, it was draining, wasn't it? 120 minutes, huge pitch at Wembley. I know they are Premier League professionals and you'd expect them to be fit. But this game is on a Wednesday, so you think Monday and Tuesday may be complete recovery times. Mm. No time for any training sessions, play on Wednesday. And you could see some of those City players in particular were fatigued at the end of the match. Yaya Toure, I know he always looks like he's just a tall granddad out there, doesn't he? Like doddering about, and still he manages to run quickly without looking like he's breaking out of a jog, really. But he looked shattered on Sunday. David Silva looked really tired as well. And as Derek mentioned, Aguero let his supporters down for once. I know Lee had. That was Lee's nap, wasn't it? Aguero to score any time. I must admit that Sergio Aguero to score and Man City to win at 4-1 and then Hanstad's offer looks good. I'll go with him to score any time here, Aguero at 13-10. Had a couple of cast iron chances on Sunday. You'd expect him to get a couple more in this game, and Mignolet won't save them this time. Aguero, usually so clinical, took his penalty well in the shootout. 13-10, Aguero to score any time, because I'm not sure what the result's going to be here. Not as confident on City as Derek is, just because I don't know how they'll react from having played 120 minutes. I know Liverpool did as well, but Man City's most influential players in recent history, David Silva and Yaya Toure, looked out on their feet in that game at the weekend, so I'm not sure they'll be fully fit for this one.
Yeah, it was interesting to read afterwards Jurgen Klopp's comments about Daniel Sturridge. The reason he didn't take a penalty is because he was knackered.
Well, I noticed that, you know, about 5 minutes ago there was he should have closed down a City defender and he didn't do it, and I think it was Coutinho was alongside and he had to do it, and I could see him giving Sturridge a look at it to say, well, come on, that's your man. It was, and I thought to myself, he's gone at the game. It was longer than 5 minutes, probably in the last 15 minutes of extra time. So yeah, there's a good chance that Sturridge won't even start this game.
Yeah, I think there'll be a lot of changes from both sides. I think Kelechi Iheanacho will start in this match as well. Just on the penalty shootout very quickly, Derek, before we leave this match. I was surprised at the take, because I know you mentioned Daniel Sturridge there, but you've got Divock Origi, a recognised striker, Henderson the captain, Milner deputising, and none of them took penalties.
Well, I've got a long-held opinion on penalties, and whether it's your regular penalty taker or not, I think you just give it to the guys who are most confident.
Right.
Ones who've had a blind, lads who've had a blind, full of confidence, they want to take the pen. Those who've had a stinker or a knacker, they won't want to, and I just leave it to them. I don't think there's, you're a striker, therefore you take a pen. No, I disagree.
Okay.
Let's move on to Arsenal against Swansea next. And Arsenal 4-11, the draw 19-5. Swansea are 15-2. Dave, you can have first crack at this. Arsenal conspiring to throw away the title once again.
They are, and this is something we've mentioned numerous times on the podcast. When the going gets tough, the tough get going, and Arsenal haven't got it. It's that simple. Graeme Souness, in his post-match analysis of that game at Old Trafford, he was absolutely brilliant. He got it spot on. That performance at Old Trafford on Sunday was insipid from Arsenal. I don't think the fans mind if players make errors, as long as the application and the energy is there. But that was one of Arsenal's biggest games this season, and they were terrible. Theo Walcott's performance in particular was utterly abysmal. He was anonymous from the outset. Another big game where Alexis Sanchez was a non-factor. The defending for Marcus Rashford's two goals was appalling. Gabriel needs to ruffle him up at least. Had a free header from 4 yards out, but the ball wasn't whipped in with any great purpose from Jesse Lingard. Just stood up and no one got near him. Arsenal have conspired to throw this season away, really, because they've had an ideal opportunity to win it with one of the most talented teams in the league in terms of squad strength and depth. And I've defended Arsene Wenger numerous times on the podcast in the past, but I wondered how his players would react to his public criticism after the Barcelona match, where he called them naive, and there was no reaction whatsoever. and it was an inexcusable performance. This is the sort of game where you'd expect them to bounce back, and a game where they could win. But Swansea have got a couple of wins at the Emirates in recent seasons, and I think they're overpriced here at 15-2. Yep. I think Arsenal. I think if you're thinking about backing Arsenal at 4-11, you need to be checking yourself into the madhouse, because it's too short in my opinion. So I'll be with Swansea in some form here. 15-2 to win this game, Swansea, and Swansea plus one on the handicap. That's over 2-1. 11-5. Two results running for you here. Given they've got results against Arsenal at the Emirates in recent times as well. I'll be playing Swansea plus one. I'll go slightly safe here. Play Swansea plus one at 11-5. But Arsenal were a disgrace on Sunday.
Are you in agreement there as well, then, Derek?
Yeah. They were. I mean, but the only surprise is that anybody was surprised, because that's just typical Arsenal, isn't it? When you're right, when a going gets tough, the tough get going. Well, Arsenal get going home. They're just. How many times now? And it never ceases to amaze me how the manager avoids the flack that other managers in his position would be getting it by the bucket load. And also, you mentioned this is one of the most talented squads in the Premier League, the most talented squad, I think you said. And I'm looking down the list here now. I'm looking at the goal scorer markets at Arsenal players, and I'm struggling to see all this talent. Yeah, Sanchez maybe. Who else there would get a game for Man City? I can't see anybody.
There's a few players.
Ozil, you see, he's the great pretender. He's the great pretender in my eyes. I do not see anything from Ozil that would make me think, yeah, he's a player. Okay, he's played for Real Madrid, and he's had great plauders. But I mean, Theo Walcott's been getting plauders, and he's been useless for about seven seasons. I just do not see anything.
Oh, you can't compare Mesut Ozil with Theo Walcott, Derek.
No, well, you can in the kind of press coverage you get. I just don't see. I don't see Ozil as a game changer. Oh, I really don't.
All right, he's got so many assists this
season.
Yeah,
he has got so many assists. He does produce.
When we played proper football, we never had all this assist nonsense. You know, I'll tell you how stupid this assist is. When that Stoke goal, he scored that goal from about three seasons ago. The left back played it back to him, and he rallied up front. But the left back gets an assist for that, for a back pass to his goalie. You know, that goes down as an assist. So. You know what?
He's been in key areas.
He got loads of assists for Real Madrid, right? His assist at Real Madrid was passing the ball to Ronaldo at the halfway line, and Ronaldo beats about 11 men and score. I'm not having it at all. I just don't see it. I do not see anything from Ozil that makes me think he deserves all these plaudits he gets. Now, okay, I might be wrong on him, so let's just take him out of the equation.
Yeah.
What else is there?
That's fair. They've got a lot of players that have been heavily hyped. Aaron Ramsey and Theo Walcott. To name a couple. I think Lauren Koscielny, even though he was dismal at the weekend, is a decent centre-half as well. Olivier Giroud, not quite top class. So I get Derek's point. On Mesut Ozil, though, I think he would slot into any Premier League team in the country. I really do. I think he's a fantastic player. Sometimes, Derek, maybe put off by the way he looks on the pitch, given that he doesn't always look fully immersed in a football match, perhaps.
No, he doesn't, and he drifts out of games an awful lot too. But I mean, given the choice of Mesut Ozil or David Silva, I mean, I'd have Silva all day long. Yeah. I don't think you can compare them. Give me a choice between Mesut Ozil and Coutinho, I'd have Coutinho all day long too. Sorry, he's not top class in my eyes.
Okay.
All right, what about a bet here, Derek? Are you going to play Swansea then at 15-2?
Yeah, well, you know what I might do? Because I think 15-2 is overpriced here. And, you know, I think I've got Leitis over recent weeks, because normally I would be going, yeah, I'm going back 15-2. Never mind about, you know, playing safe, going in for a gold star. But I found myself doing that in recent weeks, but going with a gold star and kicking myself in the calf, you know, heavily when the away team wins. So I'm going to go for Swansea at 15-2 here. Enough of this playing safe.
Right, look, favours the brave and all that. Man United against Watford next, then Manchester United 4-6, the draw 13-5, Watford 9-2. Manchester United beat Arsenal at the weekend. It's been a bit of an up and down season for them, but things seem to be going okay at the moment, and it looks like they've found a bit of a talent in Marcus Rashford. Do you agree, Derek?
Well, you see, this is the thing with Man United. They'll get somebody like this, Marcus Rashford, who'll come in And he'll, you know, he'll score a few goals on his debut in early games. Everyone thinks he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. We had it with that Italian geezer a few seasons ago. We can't remember, scored that goal against
Makeda. It is, Derek.
Who was it?
Federico Makeda.
Makeda, that's it, yeah. And he ended up playing in someone like Aldershot or something like that. We had it with Januzaj as well. He came in, scored a couple of goals, had a few, one or two decent performances early on. And what he was sent out on loan earlier in the season. So I'm not getting worked up about it. To be honest, the goals he scored against Arsenal, you and I could have scored. He was left unmarked by a criminally bad Arsenal defence. He could turn out to be great. He's only 18 and he's playing for Man United in the Premier League. He's got to have something about him. But, you know, I'm not getting worked up yet at this stage. 4-6, Man United. I'm not getting worked up about that either, to be honest. Watford have definitely gone off the boil. They look the side that could challenge for Europe, but they seem to be playing easy-dozy football at the moment. The goals have dried up for them. But let's not forget, they still have won 5 games away from home, you know, from their 13. They are capable of winning on the road. You know what? I think United, given that the injury problems they've had, they were lucky at the weekend. They met an Arsenal side that were criminally bad. I can't imagine Watford giving them such an easy time. And I think 9-2 is a shade of value about Watford.
Starting with Watford there, then you mentioned the injuries in there as well. I think, is it 13 first-team players injured for Manchester United?
It is, and he keeps mentioning it, doesn't he? Louis van Gaal, every time there's a press conference, he talks about the injuries. I agree with Derek as well on Marcus Rashford. He has been phenomenal. He's got 4 goals in 2 appearances, those 2 against Midtjylland, and then the 2 against Arsenal. But we wouldn't know anything about him if Manchester United even had 3 or 4 injuries and hadn't sold strikers in the summer. He wouldn't be getting a look in now. And the comparisons with Wayne Rooney, people saying, oh, well, Wayne Rooney scored his first brace in the Premier League at this point in his career in terms of from an age perspective. But Wayne Rooney had been at Everton as a 16-year-old. He was a genuine phenom in the early part of his career. Rashford got 2 against Midtjylland, yes. The defending in that Arsenal game was appalling, and Cech should have saved the first one as well. It was straight at him. I know he's slightly unsighted when Jesse Lingard jumped out of the way, but Cech got both hands to that and could have saved it. This is going to be tough for Manchester United because they have all those injuries, and that was an intense game against Arsenal. Even though they won it 3-2, they gave up 61% of the possession and were chasing the ball for large periods of that match, even though everything Arsenal did was in front of them. Watford haven't been as good recently, as Derek mentioned. That draw against Bournemouth may be slightly fortuitous to get a point in that game. Prior to that, they'd beaten Leeds in the FA Cup, and before that, 1-2-1 at Crystal Palace. But they're not a bad side, Watford, and they're overpriced here against a Manchester United side with plenty of problems defensively. I thought the young lad that came on at left back looked very, very good, and I wonder where Mensah. I wonder whether he's going to start in this match as well. Rashford maybe. I think if Martial's fit, Anthony Martial's fit, Rashford might see some game time as substitute here because he went off with an injury in that match. But I'll be with Watford here. I quite like Watford at 9-2. Again, I'll play Watford +1. I quite fancy a few of the bigger price sides away from home in the Premier League this weekend, and Watford's another one. So Watford +1 would be my bet in this match, and that's 5-4.
I know you can relight these records pretty much for every game if you wanted to, but last time Watford beat Manchester United?
Ooh, you're testing me.
Before I was born.
Was it really?
1986, I make it.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Not before you were born, though, Derek.
I was 1986, the very year I was born.
Let's move on to the penultimate game we look at, West Ham against Tottenham. West Ham 3-1, the draw 11-5. Tottenham are even money. Tottenham, we know they're going pretty great guns at the moment. They're second in the league. If results go their way, they could be top of the league at the end of this week. Dave, do you see them beating West Ham here?
Oh, I'm not sure. Tough match for Spurs, this one. Spurs is... Form has been exceptional. We've seen that in recent weeks. Only that loss against Crystal Palace in the FA Cup spoiling a perfect record over the last 2 months in all competitions. Came through against Fiorentina in the Europa League. Big win against Swansea at the weekend, coming from a goal down to win 2-1. And that's been the cornerstone of Spurs' form all season, that ability to pick up points when they've been trailing in matches. They've picked up a league-high 17 points from losing positions in the league this season, which is huge. And we've talked, Derek, about their collective strength throughout the course of the year. That was in evidence again. But they're going to need their resolve here because West Ham are a very, very strong side. West Ham, sixth in the league, 43 points. They're on the fringes of qualifying for Europe next season. Didn't look great against Sunderland at the weekend. For the first time, I thought they looked susceptible defensively. And Sunderland may be slightly unfortunate not to pick up a point. Not sure from a betting perspective here. Even money Spurs is as short as I'd want to take. But I wouldn't be backing West Ham to win this match either. I'm going to go for the draw here. 12-5 the draw in this match. So a draw at Upton Park on Wednesday night for me.
Draw for Dave. Then what do you make of it, Derek?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, West Ham are 3-1 initially makes some sort of appeal. Because you know they'll be bang at it because this is like a local derby. There's no love lost between these two teams or their supporters. But I thought they were really disappointing in that Sunderland game, West Ham. And two or three times I've seen them in recent weeks. I haven't been that impressed. There's an argument too that they're still in the FA Cup, aren't they? They're there's an argument that that might be uppermost on their minds.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Not when Tottenham come calling, surely. But I can't really go for them, even at 3-1. And then Tottenham are a bit short as well. They rode their luck against at the weekend against Swansea. Yeah, had a lot of attempts on goal and probably deserved the victory. But by all accounts, they weren't at their best. Difficult one. Really, really difficult game, this one. I can see a draw, this one too. I wouldn't think Tottenham would be that upset by getting a draw, and the same applies to West Ham. Yeah, I'll go for the draw here, but no confidence whatsoever in this game.
One goal scorer to mention as well, Derek mentioned him at the weekend, Mikel Antonio, who played...
Yeah, you did well there. Yeah. Excellent.
He's 3-1 and he is a real home bird. He's got 5 in his last 7 at Upton Park or the Billing Ground, whichever you prefer. He's 3-1 to score any time, which isn't the worst bet in the world. I can see Andy Carroll getting a start in this match as well. I think West Ham might adopt a different approach. Emmanuel Emenike has been playing as the focal point of that front three that they adopt, West Ham. I can see Andy Carroll playing and Dimitri Payet and Mikel Antonio being either side in this game. Antonio 3-1 to score any time is a bet that I quite like, given he's got 5 in his last 7. Upton Park, so that's one if you're looking at a goal scorer.
Yeah, on the subject of goal scorers as well, Nasser Chadli seems to keep popping up every now and
again.
He scored again at the weekend as well. So.
Yeah, 13-5 for him to score. Yeah. He's a player that I really like, Nasser Chadli, and he gives them an option. Whether he starts in this game or not is open to question, but if his name is on the team sheet, 13-5 is not a bad price on him to score either.
Mm. Let's move on to the final game we look at then. Stoke against Newcastle, 19-20 for Stoke City. The draw total 5. Newcastle are 3-1. Stoke with a victory at the weekend over Villa. They won the game before that as well against Bournemouth. And they take on a Newcastle side who are dreadful away from home.
Yeah.
It's 5 straight defeats on the run in the Premier League for them. Do you lean with Stoke at home here?
You've got to be, haven't I? I mean, I was against Villa, and my eyes, Newcastle are not that much better, particularly away from home anyway. I mean, on home territory, you wouldn't back against them too easily. But away from home, their record is shocking, isn't it? 7 goals scored away from home, 31 conceded in 13 games. That is quite shocking. It shows you that's evidence that they give up the ghost. They're down tools away from home. And if they're going to stay up, they're going to have to get some results on the board at St. James's Park. I can't see why Stoke won't win this. They were similar price to they were against Villa on Saturday. They did the business there. Mark Hughes will keep them at it. I still think he's got his hands on a European place. They're going great guns. It has to be Stoke.
Do you agree, Dave?
I like both teams to score. I'm not 100% convinced Stoke are the bet at 17-20 in this game. I think they are most likely winners, but Ryan Shawcross is still out. I mean, he's rated very highly as far as the market is concerned. I think if he was guaranteed to play in this game, Stoke would be definitely a shade shorter. But Steve McLaren's had a couple of weeks. They've had a couple of weeks off Newcastle, and I think that might have refreshed them in the lead up to this game because they had to get over that humiliating defeat at Stamford Bridge against Chelsea. I think they've got enough going forward to trouble this Stoke side, though. And Fabrizio Colaccini is out, which is definitely a blessing in disguise for Newcastle, because as he gets older, he's becoming more of a liability. It should be Stephen Taylor and Chancellor Mbemba at the back. I'd be very surprised if they kept Jurdan, Shaqiri and Marko Arnautovic quiet, though. But Newcastle are definitely good enough to get a goal against this Stoke team. So I just like both teams to score in this game at 10 to 11. I take the result out of it. If I was leaning one way or the other, I would be leaning towards Stoke. They're now 19 to 20, so getting towards even money to win this game. But I'll play both teams to score at a very similar price at 10 to 11.
I'm going to put the two together as well. Stoke to win and both teams to score is 100 to 30 in the betting there as well. But I think Stoke are getting to a good price here at 90, almost even money against a hapless Newcastle side away from home.
Yeah, they don't seem to be highly rated by the compilers, really. And Stoke, and as you mentioned earlier, Newcastle, or as Derek mentioned as well, Newcastle have lost 16 of their last 20 Premier League away games, which is astonishing. 1-2 and drawn 2 in that spell. I'll stick with both teams to score at 10 to 11 as my main bet in this match.
What was your main bet here, Derek?
Well, Stoke are even. Well, just a shade under evens. I don't know what it is. Stoke don't capture the attention of your odds compiler.
No, they don't.
No, it's too big, that. Way too big.
All right, shall we finish off with best bets? Do you have best bets in midweek?
Yeah, let's finish off with naps. Derek, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. You know, having said that, when you've got a couple bottom win like Everton, a 4-5 to win a Villa, why look around and try and be fancy and smart ass? Well, I'm going to be doing just that. I'm going to go for Everton because I went for an odds on poke at the weekend and I can't do that two weeks in the run. I'm going to go for Everton minus a goal at 2-1 because I think they'll run riot at Villa.
I love that. I do like that Everton bet minus one. You know what, I'm going to go with West Brom to get something against Leicester City midweek. So I'll play slightly safer. I'll play West Brom plus one at 5-4 against Leicester. I've been saying it all season, who may at some point come to the end of their tether, Leicester City. West Brom plus one. Just on that, Derek, as well, that 9-1. Man City and Spurs to finish 1-2 in either order that Lee mentioned on the dual forecast in the Premier League outright betting.
Yeah.
That looks better if Leicester's wheels do come off at some point.
Well, what price is it now? It won't be 9-1 now.
I didn't see if they'd revised it earlier on, but it can't be 9-1 now, can it?
No,
with Arsenal being beaten.
No. No, they haven't got it.
No, they've not got it up there.
No.
Yeah, which is a shame, but I presume that will be revised at some point.
Yes, well, you'd hope so, wouldn't you? And yeah, that's looking better and better as the weeks go by.
All right, I'm going to play it relatively straight bat and simple, I think. I just think Stoke are a good price to beat Newcastle, 19 to 20.
Yeah, okay. I wouldn't argue with that.
And that pays 12.16 to 1 for that treble.
Very good. Yeah, hopefully we'll be able to land that one then.
Fair enough. Well, it's been a pleasure, guys. Thank you very much and enjoy this week.
Cheers, lads.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.